Good morning. Today is Tuesday, June the 19th. Joining us is School's Out. School's Out. No traffic on the roads in the morning.
Exactly. Yeah. There you go. I don't have to drive 3 blocks out of my way to get to a light.
Yeah. Joining us this morning is the general manager of the Humboldt Community Services District, Dave Hall.
Morning, Brian.
Good morning, sir. All right, continuing in our new little theme of...
Why do I say it?
Our word this morning is abeyance.
Okay.
What is the reason we say that something is held up, that it's held in abeyance? Any idea?
Why do we say it?
It's because abeyance literally means hold your mouth open. The word comes from the French bayer, to gape, and the allusion is to those who, while waiting for something to happen, stand with their mouth open. Abeyance. Kind of cool, huh?
There you go.
All right, see?
Now we know. So we've moved
knowledge
from...
Knowledge doesn't have to be that boring. We've gone all the way from A1 to abeyance. Yes, as you can tell, we've got a long
way. We changed the format now. So
We found this book, and what's really interesting...
I want you to start doing the limericks.
That I couldn't find that book, yeah. Dave. I just don't. Not
I'll
sure.
I'll get it for you.
Good. I think we got about a year and a half on this one. We'll bump into something else. So summertime, in the middle of everything, we've kind of seen the change in the weather. What are the state recommendations or the district's hearty suggestions about watering lawns and landscaping and some of that kind of stuff now, because we're starting to see the foliage along the side of the roads drying out. Some of the lawns now are starting to dry out a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the state's has still wants you to make sure you're not watering the sidewalk when you have the automatic sprinklers. They still don't want you to water after it's rained and all those kind of things. So those restrictions that we had during the drought.
Well, the price is taking care of that.
Yeah. So that's right. There you go. See? Yeah. The state has also recently passed a bill that is set in motion a process where at some point we're going to have to say you can only use X gallons a day.
Now, is that going to be?
And it's going to be some landscape pieces on it. It's a very complicated formula. I think largely it's going to get dumped on the water districts and the cities to figure out, you know, and comply with all this and record all this data. But more of this is aimed at single family residents kind of stuff. So if you have 50 gallons a day per person is what you're going to get. Well, of course, we don't have a way to monitor that, so that's going to have to likely cost a lot of money to put in something that'll do that. And then there's the enforcement and all the rest of this. So we're not sure where this is all going to go. I believe we have a couple of years that the state's going to come up with the details of how they're going to implement this. So, it's in motion now. We opposed it and tried to modify it. All the water agencies in the state, but we're only minorly successful.
Your sense is it going to be? And I know I'm not a fan of the ward thing that is going into Eureka. That was predicated on X population.
Right.
Okay. Not X number of voters. So you get swings of about a 2-to-1 ratio based on whatever the ward is, with no recognition of the guy next to you. Anyway, with the water, do you think it's going to be based on the number of individuals per house, the size of the property per house, the age of the people in the house? You're giggling. I mean, same analogy, right? If you've got two young kids and mom and dad,
right,
versus one with three kids or four, you know, like in duplex, two older couples, the water usage is going to be radically different just based on the number of showers and baths and laundry that are going on. It just kind of seems like you're going to penalize the young families.
Or everybody. Yeah.
Yeah, or you jack everybody up, and that becomes the reference, and now the older folks that are on the fixed incomes are going to get drilled on this one.
It probably won't, of all the factors you listed, age probably won't be one of them, but size of the family, the landscape area that you have, you know, the square feet of this, the square feet of
historical
that.
Usage? That would be a logical one also.
Yeah, for how much you used in the past. Well, yeah. And see, this is, There's an element of deciding what that magic number is for your area that's still in play. So is it 50 gallons a person a day? Is it 70 gallons a person a day? You know, the state would like it to be 50. In our district, even during the drought, we got into the 50s probably, even in the drought, probably half the time. And now it's bumped back up to, it's probably in the high 50s to low 60s. Which is an improvement over 2013. Everybody's doing a good job of conserving water, partly probably, as you say, because of the price increases, but also because of just, you know, the consciousness that 3 years of drought has put in people.
I am pretty simplistic in my approach to life, as you know. Pocketbook dictates.
Yeah.
If they want the usage down, jack up the price. Period, end of story. People can self-regulate how they want, or if they want to be, if that's an option that they're willing to invest in, then let them invest in it.
Yeah.
It would kind of be like telling everybody you have to drive the same car.
You're right.
That doesn't make any sense. Okay, everybody has to, you know, the same water usage. That doesn't make any sense either. Has that gone out of the decision-making process?
It's more difficult because of the Proposition 218 compliance issues. It's the cost of the water is based on the cost of service. And so it can't be arbitrarily picked to drive it up. There were some places early in the drought that did exactly that, and they got whacked back and had to retool it. There are some ways to do some conservation levels that get, you know, the more you use, the more it costs. But it's a little more arduous because just because you use more doesn't mean it costs more to produce it. So you just have, you know, you're buying more volume, but the, you know, the fixed costs don't change. So
maybe we each need to have our own little water contract with our water service provider. I get X number of acre feet a year.
There you go.
How we use it is our issue, and then if we exceed it,
seems like that'd work for all of us that get the water from Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District. We're kind of in that boat, but we're still in the state of California, so
yeah,
Sacramento's
fine. One step at a time there, dude. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbara Streisand, Billy Joel, and the Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hull. Dave, the concept of investment with infrastructure is something that is, I would suggest, lost on a lot of us. Had an interesting discussion last night with a buddy, roofs for your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and how long do you have the house roof for? Do you buy a 10-year roof, a 20-year roof? He was arguing with the roofer that he wanted a 40 or a 50-year roof. Well, no, you don't want to. I want a, and it was back and forth with that. Okay, kind of tough to change the vendor's perspective sometimes. But when you're looking at some of the infrastructure investment,
right,
motors for your wells, the pipes in the dirt, or gravel or whatever, mud, whatever it's in. The houses that house these facilities, the water tanks, et cetera, et cetera. Do you look to what you can afford and have more replacements? Or do you say, we want this thing to be a long-term investment, and that means 50-plus years? You don't want to have to deal with that piece of pipe under Harris Avenue again.
That's really where we go, is to try to get the longest lasting, most durable material that we can. The place that we've had a lot of the changes, Because a lot of the stuff that we put in the ground, you know, some of these things can go, you know, 100 years or something, some of these pipe things. But the technologies change. You know, back when, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, this wrapped steel pipe was the best deal we could get, durable for water lines. Well, you know, turns out it corrodes and it leaks and it does everything. And the plastics have come along. And so it's been an opportunity to, as technologies change, to upgrade those things. Another factor is the regulations change. You know, some of our pumps, the water pumps, have impellers that are made out of materials, or did have materials that all of a sudden the state decided we shouldn't have those anymore. So you pull those out, and then you have a choice of, do we replace the whole thing because it's 30 years old, or do you just replace the impeller, which is, 60% of the cost of a new one? And you take those kind of one by one. Typically, we'll lean on the let's replace the whole thing. But in some cases, if it's, there's some magic level in there, we say, well, this isn't that old, it's pumping, it's doing just fine, then we do the upgrades to just the components of it. So it's a little bit of a moving target, but we're always looking to try and get the most durable, long-lasting, compliant materials we can in, so that, just like you said, we don't have to go back. Our little district, we've got 114 miles of water mains and about 90 miles of sewer mains. So, it's taken us 20 years to replace about 12 miles of steel line that is in there. We're fortunately, we're down to just about a mile and a half of the very smallest diameter steel lines. All the big stuff's all been changed out and everything now. But it's long-term thing, change it over to the right stuff.
20 years to replace how many miles?
11 and a half.
Was all the other already plastic?
Yes.
Or is that the next guy's responsibility?
Well, it was different. Yeah, it's really even older. It's plastic and up.
So how long does it take? New regulation comes in. Plastic is putting PVC or oils into the water. It's now detectable as 1/10 billionth per particle. That's no longer an acceptable standard.
All the plastic pipes got to go, yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. Well, if something like that happens, that's that's multi-billions of dollars for everybody in the state, every agency in the state, to replace all this plastic line they've put in. But the scenario you pose is not unusual. A lot of times, all of a sudden, the stuff that was appropriate and all permitted, 20, 30, 40 years ago, all of a sudden isn't anymore. So,
do you get a grandfathering?
Well, it would depend. Or? Let's use your scenario, and just for everybody, nobody's seeing that right now. But
okay. but just, we say puts purple into the water at 1/10 billionth of a particle. I mean, something that's really just
at that level.
Goofy. But the level changes.
Yeah,
it's not that.
And a typical state approach would be they would put it on the water suppliers to figure it out. And say, you got to do this by, and they'd put some timeline on there, by 2050, you have to replace all this stuff. Good luck. Then there may be enough pushback that there'll be some bond that'll work on disadvantaged communities to help replace those lines in those areas. For areas that don't meet that, that's going to be on their own to figure out how to replace all this. That's sort of the typical format the state uses to implement rules. So long timeline to comply, and then possibly some funding opportunities.
Possibly. Yeah.
Possibly.
Well, and there's got to be recognition. If you guys can't make money, I suppose you could lose money, but that it's all a pass-through.
That's exactly right.
So it just kind of seems just like
say,
it's a shell game.
Yeah. So triple your price so you can comply with
this. The state of California doesn't have the stamp on it. It's the water provider whose stamp is on the bill.
Right. That way it takes the blame off the state. Right? If you're the customer that gets bills 8 times higher because you're complying with state laws, then there you go.
Yeah.
But let's hope none of that
happens. You probably don't want me on your
board
then either, because I... Yeah, holy Toledo. That would
maybe on the state water board you'd do good.
Now there we would. Yeah,
That would be a big help, Brian.
Because then the stamp would come out as a state, not the local. Yeah. KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:30.
We do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time, 8:35. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hull from the Humboldt Community Services District. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting, Redeck, American Egg, and by Lolita Cheese. Dave, the infrastructure that you guys are doing, last time you were out, we talked a little bit about the large tanks.
Right.
That you were going to have a diver go in or a painter go in with scuba gear or something. Look at the inside of the tanks, make the determination, figure out what's going on, what can you afford, what fancy paint do you have to, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Has it happened?
In our budget process, our budget and CIP process that's hopefully wrapping up here in the capital improvement program, process that's wrapping up here with our district, hopefully in a week or so. For the next fiscal year, for 18-19 fiscal year, we have we've developed a water tank evaluation and assessment and upgrade program for three of our biggest tanks that are in the worst condition. And worst condition isn't like they're falling down or anything. But, you know, some of them are 40 years old and they've got some issues. And it turns out after the evaluation we've done so far that there's actually some structural things we need to work on the roofs. So if we do that, that means we're doing the inside and the outside. So it turns into a big job. So we're staggering these because our district
one tank at a time.
Exactly, because our district tries to do things in a pay as you go sort of a format, so we can't load all these up all at once, and so we take the highest priority and then we'll work down the list. So that program is actually kicking off next fiscal year. We've actually done
a couple weeks
exactly.
Get away from the government stuff, man. Okay,
the other thing
now, are we gonna see any thing driving by out in the cutting area, because you talked about having a portable temporary thing on wheels that would help out,
right?
And do,
yeah,
and
nobody sees that one unless you're a bird. So,
oh, okay,
that one's,
so it's not like in your parking lot.
No, but the one in our parking lot, the million gallon tank, it is going to get painted. That's the big one that's at our Walnut Street office. It's getting painted. It's going to get painted inside and out, but that's not for I think a couple of years.
That's how long the timeline is on these replacements.
Yes, it's a three-year cycle for these three tanks. The temporary one is the interesting one. That's the Ridgewood tank that's out, kind of borders the McKay Forest. It was on Green Diamond property when we got it. So yeah, that's what the other one that's pretty exciting is. We're wrapping up the actual construction of our South Bay well, our new South Bay well. Remember, we had some issues with the casing probably 3 years ago, so we took it out of service. The board went through an exercise to say, well, maybe do we want to have wells in the future, or do we want to have this mixture of wells and purchased water that we buy from the city and Humboldt Bay Municipal Water District, or do we want to just buy all our water? And so they went through an exercise and determined that it was better and more resilient to have wells, have our three wells, and then buy water to supplement that. So that put us on the path to rebuild this well that had been out of service. So
that's the one at the base of Humboldt Hill?
Correct.
Kind of at the overpass?
Right there on South Broadway.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so we got a contractor just a couple months ago. They started this month, and they're going to be wrapped up pretty soon. Now we have some...
Really? It's only a 3 or 4 week process?
Yeah. Well, that's the way these things go, right? It takes forever to get permits and funding and this and that, but it takes 3 weeks to do it. Yeah. But... that said, we're excited that it's going on real smooth.
Bigger capacity?
No, same capacity. They've abandoned the old well by now, which is an interesting process, and one that's further up the hill at the end of Princeton Street. You know, we have the college streets that are at Lower Humboldt Hill there. We have a well field there, and there was two wells. One of them had been out of service for a long, long, long time, and so we officially have abandoned it now also. So,
does that mean you fill it in?
You fill it in. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. You have to make some holes in the casing so that then they can put some grout in, some cement, you know, fairly liquidy cement, so that it squeezes out in and encases the whole thing. Interesting process, so...
So why not build the capacity of the new well larger so that you don't have to rely on City of Eureka as much, as an example? Because I would think that it would drive the cost down, make you more self-reliant, and then if needed, you'd have some kind of an asterisk contract.
Right.
As necessary.
It was part of the discussion we did on this water alternatives, you know, which way are we going to go? Are we going to use the wells or other water or both? We had a discussion about putting in more wells in that area, and right now we haven't done the legwork to see if the aquifer will handle much more than what we're doing. We're pulling a lot of water out of it. The aquifer is just fine. But we don't know what the other end of that is. So that takes another big step, and the board didn't want to do that at this point.
The study?
Yeah, to get into detail on if we put in two or three more wells, what it would take.
Would there
what
be
it would do to the aquifer?
Cost savings?
I mean, the more, and that was the one alternative, is if we let's say we replaced all of Humboldt Bay and the city's water with our well water, you know, then we're just paying basically electricity, right, after the things are in.
And paid for.
And paid for. Which we do a pay as you go thing, right?
So, right.
Yeah. But the board thought the mixture was hit the sweet spot of the amount of money we wanted to spend purchasing and that resilience, and not wanting to even push the aquifer. So
the aquifer itself, though, is it primarily under all the springs under Humboldt Hill? Is that what it draws from, or does it draw from a larger geographic
area? It's actually called the Eureka Plain Basin, so it actually goes clear under the city of Eureka and down south to like Hooked and Slough kind of area. So it's a big aquifer. Our wells, of course, are in the at the kind of the base of the Elk River Valley. Which has been real productive, but it's a fairly large aquifer, I guess.
Is there a concern that it would be too taxed?
No, but we don't want to spend $500,000 on something to find out that it's not going to be usable. So
why you have a study, or is the study cost $500,000?
No, the study doesn't cost that. Well, no, the study didn't cost $500,000, but it'd be in the
six figures?
Yeah, just barely, I would bet.
I would think that somewhere, you set aside a couple of shekels here and a couple of ducats there, that would be something that you would want to know.
It's for sure the next step. The way the board's approached this is again, to get these three wells, back in and operational, and so we can fold that into the system and then kind of move on from there.
And the tanks and everything, and then...
Well, the tanks, yeah, it's separate, but at the same time, sort of a...
It's the same budget, baby.
It is the same budget. The money comes from the same place.
Yeah, and I know where that place is.
Yeah, we don't want to overtax that
either.
Yeah,
and I think I'm sitting on it right now. KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:42.
SoCal just got a whole lot closer. No, we're not talking about some big, scary geological event. It's way cooler and with much less tectonic shifting. Starting in June, flying to LA will be quicker than ever with United Airlines' new nonstop flights from Humboldt County. That's right, no stops between here and there. Ascend, descend, and you're landing, like in just a couple hours. So it's kind of like LA is just down the road a piece. So what are you waiting for? Check it out at flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:47. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with Dave Hull. Dave, sigh of relief after the elections at the state level?
Yeah, the one thing that we've talked about before that we were concerned about, a lot of water agencies in the state were concerned about, was this the water tax bill that was going through. And remember, just a brief history, this started out as a Senate bill a year ago, SB 623. And that then the beginning it didn't make a lot of headway last year, so it turned into a 2-year bill. So this year the governor's office picked it up and added that language to do a water tax on everybody in the state in as a budget trailer bill. And that's, you know, to a lot of us, that's kind of dangerous because that's a different process and there's not as much opportunity to impress people on it. But I'm happy to say, this
impress
is where you
people.
Were going. I'm happy to say that the budget deal got done and the water tax was not in it.
So what happened?
So, well, my guess is they actually did listen to all these water agencies saying, you know, for the purposes you're trying to do this for, you've got other ways to do it. And in fact, they picked one of those. They added about $28 million to help these disadvantaged communities deal with the issues they were trying to do the water tax.
So all's well that ends well.
Well, not quite.
That's a water reference here,
well,
as we get to the end of the show.
I get it.
I'm trying to be cute here.
That's cute. Yeah, well, right. Not quite, though, because the Senate bill's still alive.
Well,
so for another couple of months, yeah.
Okay. Thanks for coming by, bud.
You bet. Thanks.
See everybody tomorrow.